Welcome to OpenBox. OpenBox aims at bringing an easier understanding of open problems that help in finding solutions for such problems. In set purpose, I interview researchers, authors who have published work on open problems to understand more about nuances, and primarily these are in the space of artificial intelligence and machine learning. My name is Sundar. I'm an ethics and risk professional and an AI ethics researcher. I'm the host of the podcast. I strongly believe that ideas emerge when curiosity meets clarity. And with OpenBox, the idea is to bring clarity to the curious minds to solve real issues. This project is done in collaboration with For Humanity, is a 501 nonprofit dedicated to minimizing downside risks of AI. For Humanity develops criteria for audit of AI systems. So if you're interested in it, visit forhumanity.center. the website of For Humanity to learn more about it. Today we have a special guest, an author and a proponent who's trying to democratize causality. We have Alexander. Alexander is a machine learning researcher, educator, consultant, and author. He has gained experience from multiple Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies across Europe, US and Israel, and he has also helped to design large-scale machine learning systems. His current mission is to democratize causality. From a practitioner perspective, he's also a founder of a company, Lespire, which is into training for corporate teams, and he's also the leader of causalpython.io community. Alexander, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sundar. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you so much for this wonderful introduction.
Brilliant. It's always a pleasure, and I'm going to be discussing a little bit more about the kind of nuances that you've brought in your book, Causal Inference and Discovery in Python. But before that, let's get to one specific point here. There is a lot of discussion about causality in general. I'm very keen to understand where does causality fit in, if you want to explain it to a layperson, and how is it applied at this point in time in machine learning context?
So let me ask you a question to narrow down your question a little bit. You said, where does causality fit? Do you think about industry in particular? Do you more think about research community, both?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring in a perspective in real life, where does causality fit, right? Because not many people will understand that there is a causal relationship. People are too excited about the abilities of ML, but sometimes they miss out on the underlying causal relationships that is not clearly documented, doesn't exist, kind of thing. So I want you to give you a broader picture of, for a layman, what is causality and where are we in that?
Great question. So starting in a very broad perspective, when we think about machine learning, we often today think either about supervised or self-supervised machine learning. And the algorithms that we traditionally use in those areas, algorithms that are based on some form of association. So a special case of association is correlation, right? Or linear correlation, but we can have other types of associations as well. They might be non-linear, they might be non-monotonic, essentially anything you can think of. And we see, when we look at the generative AI today, we see that these things can work exceptionally well. There are some details to generative models that we maybe do not discuss that often, that in a sense limit the search space of those, or like the action space for those models. This is something that we usually refer to as inductive biases, right? So if you remember RNNs, those the sequential architectures that were very popular before we started with the transformers architecture, we were encoding the fact that the sequence is important for the problem implicitly via the architecture, right? So this is one thing that we're doing. Another thing that we sometimes do is, for instance, something that we used to do in contrastive learning, right? When we provide a model with pairs of semantically similar, let's say, images, and then another image that was semantically different. So now when we think about this, what we are doing here is we are trying to exclude something that we usually call spurious relationships, right? So there was a popular example a couple of years ago in computer vision when we had a classification network, a CNN, a convolutional neural network. And I was classifying images and there was a cow. And the model was doing a very good job in classifying cows as long as they were in their, what we would call a typical habitat, which means somewhere on the field, maybe in the mountains, right, and so on. But when we provided the model with a picture of an image of a cow on the beach, just laying on the beach, for instance, or cow walking in the ocean, the model was going south very quickly, right? So it was saying it's something completely different, not a cow. And this shows how this association-based reasoning, for lack of a better word, is limited when we go outside of what is typical. Right? Sometimes we, in early years of machine learning, we used to call it statistical learning. And there's a great reason for this, because most of those models are leveraging statistical properties of the data. Now, when we act in the world as humans, we leverage statistical learning as well, right? If you think about how we learn as children, all the emotional learning, all types of conditioning that we experience as humans, this is all associative learning, one form or another. So there's one thing appearing in the environment, maybe another thing happening in us. So we feel something. When we feel something, there is another stimulus in the environment. And we combine those two. We bind those two things. Now, so one example would be Pavlov's dog, right? So he was ringing a bell before giving food to those dogs. And they started salivating. And this is so-called unconditional conditioning. So they started, because it's an automatic response, right? It's not controllable by those dogs, we assume at least. So they salivate when they feel the smell of food or they see the food. But what Pavlov was able to do was able to bind the sound of the bell with the salivation, removing the food from the picture, right? So the dogs were starting salivating just for the sound of the bell. And this is associative learning, which means that we take two things that are just related because they occur together in a similar place in space or time or both, and we bind them together somehow in our mind. And this is definitely very useful. This is also very efficient type of learning in human and other non-human animals, but it has disadvantages, right? So when you think, for instance, about people who were growing up in families that were dysfunctional emotionally, they would go into their adult relationships and they will tend to repeat the same set of behaviors that they learned in their family of origin. Because unconsciously, this is what a close relationship looks like for them. And this is also a form of associative learning. Perhaps it's a little bit more complex than this, but for the sake of our discussion, we can assume so. So this is one of the limitations that we can try to generalize something that we learned in one context into another context without looking at significant changes in the context or in the environment. So let's make an example. Maybe you live in a house and there's a railway track next to your house. And every time you wake up in the morning, precisely at 9 a.m., there's a plane flying by. So you can hear the plane, you can see the plane. And exactly 5 minutes later, a train is passing on the railway track. And most people will get used to this scenario very quickly. And so one day, if the train is not passing after the plane is passing, you will be surprised, or maybe you will feel a little bit of anxiety. But those two events are essentially independent, right? So if we think about causal dependence and independence, defined as if we change something in one variable, then another variable also changes. This is Perlian definition of causality in a nutshell. Then the fact that the plane is passing by and then the train passing by 5 minutes later are independent. There is no causal mechanism between them. But they are statistically dependent through the fact that they are subsequent events in time in the same location.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this also brings me to some of the examples that we've come across to demonstrate the fact that you're mentioning. Essentially, we are speaking about how to comprehend relationship between variables in a meaningful way. And when we are trying to do that, sometimes we consider associations as causality, and that does not work all the time. To make it much more simpler, we are actually speaking about scenario. Yeah, there may be people who are buying condoms who are also buying diapers. That does not mean that everybody buying condoms buys diapers. And yeah. that because there is no causal relationship between diapers and condoms, for you to have that established clearly. And one of the foundational problems that I see is, in most cases, we don't have causal relationships clearly documented in the data at the base level, right? Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to hear more from you in that, and then see how you see that and what kind of implications that is causing because of lack of adequate documentation of causal mm-hmm. relationships.
So that's a very good question. And when we think about what we usually understand by analytics, or like advanced analytics in the business setting, people will usually just collect the data, which means record the values of variables over time, over location, and so on. And we will just store it. And then at some point, we'll take some kind of a tool. It might be a statistical test, or it might be a machine learning algorithm, whatever, anything like this. And we will do some analysis on this data. Now, you said something like this. We tend not to store the causal information. And I think there's a very good reason for that, because this traditional analytic mindset is a mindset of statistical summary of the data. And causal information is usually not present in the statistical summary. I made a pause there because this is only partially true. So we might be able, in certain circumstances, recreate or read causal information from the data itself. And this is something that I often refer to as causes leave traces, which means that you can look at the data and you can find something there. But this is not always very straightforward, because we need some kind of inductive bias, right? We said in the beginning about inductive biases in traditional machine learning, and here we also need something like this. Maybe I should say quote unquote inductive bias. This is some kind of external knowledge, external in the sense that it's not presenting the data itself, that we need to apply in a form of an assumption, for instance, to our analysis, to make sure that our conclusions are sound, in a sense, and they are correct, to guarantee that they are correct.
Yeah. So this actually triggers a follow-on question for me. From perspective of open issues as a researcher and an ethicist, one thing that I've consistently seen is that while the existence of causal relationships can be, or the causal relationships can be brought to life with a little bit of effort, sometimes using the causal theories without adequate guardrails can also be harmful, right? Whether it is, so let's say we are speaking about social theories, economic theories, behavioral theories, all of these have some kind of a broad approach to defining what things are, right? If you are applying such things to a very nano environment, which may not necessarily be equatable, then you find certain challenges which are not clearly definable. I'd like to bring in two examples. It becomes easier to make the conversation interesting. One is this concept of what we saw with Google Maps, right? Multiple devices within a vehicle in a deserted place makes it appear that the whole place is crowded with traffic. We saw this a few years back, right? Again, I see this as a causality problem because it's a definition problem of what means what and how you have interrelated the association between variables, so to say. There's a second example that I've come across personally with my work is also on use of homophily, where people use homophily as a concept to say that birds flock together or like-minded people flock together. They use this in this space of, let's say, fraud prediction, crime prediction, cybersecurity, etc., etc., where they try to see that if in your contacts database, if you have contacts of people who are considered as fraudsters, the possibility of you being a fraudster is higher. Or it classifies, right? So these causal approaches has its own flaws at the end of the day, because some of these can be validated, some of these cannot be validated. You don't have a way for you to validate it in real life. And that's where I'm very keen to understand from you, with examples like this, where are we going with causal discovery? And how do you see that shaping at this point in time? And what are the open issues within it?
Yeah, so these are all excellent questions. I will take it one by one. I think each of them could be enough for a whole episode of a podcast. Let's start from the beginning. You asked me about, you gave me these two examples where we use some heuristics and we assume that, and we take some heuristics and we use them to make decisions. In my view, causality is about three things. It's about clarity, it's about honesty, and it's about creativity. Clarity means that we clearly define what is our treatment and what is our outcome. This means that if I want to understand what is the effect of something on something else, I need to understand what is the first thing and what is the second thing. I need to be very clear about this. Then honesty is about being explicit about all the stuff that we don't know. So in causality, in the school of causality, I should say that I am part of, I identify as a part of, which is a graphical-based school of thought. We often draw those DAGs, so-called, so directed acyclic graphs, or some modifications of those, so some sort of a graphical model. And sometimes we can draw a model like this, and we can say, hey, we have this variable. So variables are represented as nodes in those graphs. We have this variable, we observed it, we recorded it. We have this variable, but there's another variable that from the theory, experience, expertise, or maybe a causal discovery algorithm, whatever the source of this knowledge is, or a hypothesis is, we don't have this variable and we know that it contributes to the system in a significant way. So honesty is about saying, okay, we just don't know this stuff. We don't have this variable. And this is where we are. So honesty is about saying, stating explicitly and clearly and honestly, not cheating others and not cheating yourself, which might be even more difficult sometimes, where we are today. And the third point is creativity. And honesty is very important for creativity, because if we can assess where we stand today with clarity and honesty, and then it opens for us the space to find solutions, right? And for many people who start with causality, there is this feeling that, hey, there's this idea of hidden confounding, and we usually cannot guarantee that there is no hidden confounding. So then some people draw a conclusion, therefore we cannot use causality in the real-world setting. But this is not true. There are many very creative solutions that can help us. They are not all of them are universal in the sense that they can solve all the problems for us, but at least they can solve some problems for us, right? So we have algorithms that can give us causal identifiability in the face of hidden confounding. We have algorithms where we can say, hey, we know that if there is a confounder, it won't be stronger than one of the predictors that we have in the model, and we can perform something that is called sensitivity analysis. So we can say, we can make an informed bet and say, I don't think that this can be, this unobserved variable can have a stronger influence on our outcome than one of the observed variables. And then we can say something, and sometimes this is sufficient to make a decision, like an optimal decision in a business setting, in a scientific setting, and so on and so on. So this is about causality. Now, getting back to the examples that you gave, sometimes we just go with heuristics, and sometimes it's just good enough. And there might be consequences, right, of using heuristics, but I don't feel like there's a single answer or a single golden bullet or silver bullet that we could use and say, in this situation or this class of situations, we cannot use heuristics. We should go for explicit causal models. And in another situation, we can use them, right? It's always so many variables. I'm sure you're aware of this, probably much more than I am, especially in practical settings. As someone who works with ethics and applications to the real world. So for me here, it's very difficult to say. What I can say based on my experience in industry is that sometimes there are organizations, and I see this all pretty often, that are using a statistical model or a machine learning model for decision making, where there's really where this model does not provide those organizations with information that is really required to make an informed decision. So there's one challenge that they see, that we believe during the so-called big data revolution, that having large amounts of data can solve many problems for us. And it really can, right? It can give us a lot of, and can provide us with a lot of value. But that said, there are problems that have causal structure, and then even the biggest amount of data won't help if we are using a tool that does not respect the structure. So I'm not sure if this answers your question.
It does. I'm just thinking as you speak, because what you're trying to represent is that causality is a concept that can be applied well if you have clarity on where to apply, honesty on what you believe out of that causal relationship, and you're applying that to a creative problem-solving approach. But if you miss out on any of these, if you lack adequate clarity, if you lack adequate honesty on what you believe in with reference to the causal relationships, or if you're not applying it to a creatively to a problem that needs to be solved, then you are actually creating confusion. So one of the areas that I see, and I'm very curious to know how you see it, is people use causality as convenience. And that's where the trouble starts. When you use causality as convenience, I wanted to know who could be fraudsters. Let me actually look at an association which is convenient for me to get to the end point. Yeah. And that heuristic model will work sometimes, may fail sometimes. And in the world of bias, discrimination, and harms that we are speaking about, where emerging technology is extensively used, a convenient decision could be extremely costly. And that's where I see the significance of the brilliant three words that you said in terms of clarity, honesty, and also bringing in the creative solution world. I think this is wonderful to be with you on this call and then try and learn, unravel the nuances of this. With this, we come to the end of the first part. I look forward to talking to you in the second part and more. Thanks a lot, Alexander.
Great, Sundar. Thank you so much. It was wonderful to speak with you.